upgrade your tool storage for the new year with help from Menards. For heavy-duty storage that protects your tools, choose MasterForce. From shelving units to cabinets and so much more, you can keep your tools safe and within reach. Get versatile and durable storage from MasterForce today. Check out all our MasterForce storage in-store or check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the first Three Down Nation podcast in 2026. John Hodge alongside, well, JC Abbott is off doing probably his favorite thing, honestly, Hodge. He's scouting at the College Gridiron Classic down in old Texas, so he'll be back with us at a later date in the new year. But Hodge, you got any New Year's resolutions? Do you do that?
It's called the College Gridiron Showcase, my friend, CGS. In Texas. And yes, you are right. Cheese is not on the menu this week. It will return next week. As for New Year's resolutions, I'm not a New Year's resolution guy. I personally just try to do my best every day. My best is sometimes pretty good. My best sometimes leaves a little bit to be desired. But I don't wait for January 1st. I try to do it every single day. And yeah, that's how I live my life. I don't. If I remember correctly, you are not a New Year's resolution guy. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah, and if our listeners are, I think that's great. I hope that we're recording this as of January 9th. I hope that you're still into your resolution 9 days later. I just don't understand some resolutions, though. I had a friend once who was like, I'm going to try cussing less this year. I'm like, cussing's free, and it's not even bad for your health. Like, if anything, I'm cussing more this year, not on the pod because we do want to be family friendly, but like some of these New Year's resolutions, I don't even get to begin with.
Just to start it on an arbitrary date, January 1st, to me always seemed a little funny. Like, why not just start doing something that you want to do like right now if you really want to do it? But to all those people who do partake, as you said, I hope they're continuing with the resolutions and your buddy there is not swearing as much. Maybe he's putting less, you know, money in the swear jar.
Well, I don't know if they actually are doing less swearing, but that was just what they said. And I'm like, okay, whatever. It's your life. It's your language. You can choose to say what you want to say. Personally, off the air, I'm going to continue cussing because, again, I don't have many vices. If cussing's a vice, I'll happily keep cussing.
But you don't really swear that much, though.
Yes,
you're pretty even keel.
I am pretty even keeled, but I don't like to think of cussing as something to do when you're angry. I think of it as paint that you can use to decorate the tapestry of your verbal life, so to speak.
That's eloquently said, man. There was a lot of CFL news and some NFL news as well, Hodge, that happened since our last show, which was well before Christmas and the holidays. So we should say, I think, formally to everybody, hope you enjoyed the holiday season, Christmas, if you celebrate it, or whatever else you might celebrate. Hope you got some great time with your family, enjoyed some downtime from your jobs or whatever it is that you might do in your daily life outside the holidays. And a happy 2026, wishing everybody the best from Three Down Nation to those that are listening or watching the podcast. Hope you have an awesome year in 2026. Ready to get to it, Hodge?
Born ready.
Hey, today we're discussing CFL players who have signed NFL contracts.
The CFLPA's fresh set of team report cards.
The Western Mustangs hiring Michael Faulds as their new head coach.
The Ottawa Redblacks and Toronto Argonauts setting their new coaching staffs.
And Henry Burris's departure from Florida A&M. But first, the CFL's winter meetings are set for January 12th through 14th in Calgary. The league has published a list of discussion topics, Stuart Johnston holding up what he said at Grey Cup. Among them are clock rules for the final 3 minutes in both halves annual rule proposals, a review of the replay center's mandate, potential changes to overtime, the playoff format, year-end awards. All CFL teams, please go back to calling them All-Stars, okay? Division All-Stars and League All-Stars. It's simple. It didn't need to be changed. Sorry, Randy Ambrosi. The format for free agency and the communication window. Guidelines for the 2028 Olympic participation. Negotiation lists and a possible American draft. Transparency regarding player compensation. Contingency plans for inclement weather or smoky weather. And on-uniform branding opportunities. Hodge and our listeners, if you got all that,
it's a lot.
What do you make of the agenda?
Well, the first thing I want to do is caution fans, right? There's rule changes listed on this agenda. And I think a lot of people are going to look at that and go, oh my God, Stuart Johnston with the changes. I'm losing my mind. This guy's destroying the league. No, rule changes are discussed annually at these meetings. And the reason why we are getting these details this year is because at Grey Cup, as Justin referenced, Stuart Johnston indicated that they would be publishing the agenda so that fans and members of the media and players and all the people who can't attend these meetings know what is being discussed. So this is not a new event. This is not new conversation. This is just the same annual thing. The only difference in 2026 is they've been transparent about what they're talking about. I think that's brilliant. As for a lot of these topics, I love them. I think it's good. Saving the last 3 minutes of the first and second halves for CFL games, I think is very critical, right? We talked about this. I actually really like the clock change for 2026, but you got to keep the last 3 minutes of both halves. Those are some of the best minutes in all of pro sports. I think reviewing the mandate of the replay center, which in my opinion has become overreaching. It's already been tempered a bit over the last year or two, but still doing too much. CFL awards, we've talked about this to death. In my opinion, it should be regardless of division, three finalists for MOP, Most Outstanding Canadian, all that. We just saw this year in 2025, or this most recent year, I should say, the West won every single award, right? Why are we doing divisional awards? Just have the best players available, because theoretically it's possible that the best five Canadians are in one division and the best five defensive players are in the other. Why are we doing division awards? Doesn't make sense. I'm also not a proponent of divisional All-Stars. I think we should have first team All-CFL and second team All-CFL. I don't think that division should be a part of that. And for playoff format, I think that the playoff format is good as it is, but I think it would be improved if the top two seeds, regardless of division, got byes. I think that the number sixth team should have to visit the number three team regardless of division, right? And the crossover is confusing. People aren't really sure. Well, this gets rid of the crossover. If the divisions don't matter come playoff time, you're great. And as for the free agency, I personally like the way free agency works with the communication window now, but I'm interested to see what comes of these conversations. I think there is some appetite to maybe tweak that. The communication window is still relatively new. And obviously, after the nearly four-hour delay that we saw earlier this year between Calgary and Saskatchewan, we need to revisit the policy for what happens if a game is delayed. I don't know what the solution is, but I think surely it would be smart to sit down and have a conversation about what the contingency plans should be moving forward. Because this was in 2025, that delayed game was, I wouldn't say unprecedented, but it had been decades since a situation like that had arisen. And if that same situation happens again in 2026 and the league hasn't done anything to improve that plan, then I think they've got some egg on their face. So I think planning, being proactive, having these conversations is a good thing. And I have some more thoughts, Justin, but I want to give you a chance to hop in here.
First of all, credit Stuart Johnston for publishing the agenda, the transparency, not just for us. I think more importantly, the fans, I know, will be appreciated. And Hodge, you said it well. The fans shouldn't get all up in arms that all these things are going to be changed to the game. It's part of the discussions. And these discussions have happened behind the scenes on an annual basis, as you said. But for fans in particular to have an idea of what they're actually talking about, I think makes them feel a part of that discussion. And to be quite honest, this is where I feel like the, I guess now, mandated changes to the rules in 2026 and in 2027 and the field size changes as well should have been discussed in the first place. I think that Stuart Johnston has gotten himself off to a start that he probably didn't envision with the fans for sure. He admitted that during his breakup address, that he was sort of taken aback by the blowback from the fans and tweaking the rules. And I think he's going to find that some of the people that he talks to at the winter meetings, coaches and general managers, you know, feel some type of way as well, that they weren't involved. I would still love for Stuart Johnston to name the so-called football experts who were involved in this, because if they were no names to the fans, the CFL would be trumpeting them. So I do hope that there is a healthy discussion about the, what I'll call, mandated changes, not the one so much in 2026, but in 2027. I do think that you need to have your current innovative, thoughtful coaches and general managers part of that discussion. The ones in 2026 we've talked a lot about, Hodge, makes a lot of sense, right? The uniformity in the play clock, I get it. But when you announce a rule change and it's half-baked and then fans are freaking out about the final 3 minutes, in particular at the end of the game, that's not great. So it should have been discussed here, well-packaged, and rolled out. So I hope they fix that. And then in 2027, you know, I do think you would have to imagine there's some passionate, especially Canadians, that are going to be in these discussions, you know, like a Mike O'Shea, who voiced his opinion on the rule changes, that are going to bring up some of the reasons why the CFL perhaps shouldn't make some of those changes, especially to the field in 2027. I'm not saying I'm against it one way or another, but I think those are the kind of discussions that are going to go on at the winter meetings.
Yeah, and as for things that I'm not super crazy about, I don't like necessarily the discussion about overtime. I think overtime in the CFL is basically perfect. Now, it should be noted, the agenda did say overtime during the regular season. Didn't say anything about playoffs. So maybe the thought is, in the regular season, we do two mini games aside, and then if the game is still tied, the game is still tied at the end. Maybe there's going to be discussion about shortening or lengthening the mini games. That is pure speculation on my part. Personally, if they wanted to extend them so we don't get ties anymore, I'd be happy as a clam, but I hope we don't mess with overtime too much. I think overtime is brilliant in the CFL. It's the best overtime in football at any level, in my opinion. I also don't want to see a lot more on uniform branding. We saw in the playoffs teams with branded logos on the lower back of the uniform. Look, the CFL needs the revenue. I get it. And obviously revenue is good for everybody. That said, I don't want CFL uniforms to become European hockey outfits. I'm not saying that's going to happen. I just don't want this to be the first little slip in a slippery slope, right? These uniforms need to look beautiful and on point and branded properly. I don't want to see 17 different stickers and decals and patches flopping all over these things out on the field. That wouldn't work for me. And the other thing, I'm not crazy, and this might sound odd, Justin, because I am such a draft junkie. I don't like the idea of an American draft. I like the neg lists, the way that they work. Yes, sometimes it does happen where one team might have three quarterbacks on their neg list who are ready to come up, and a QB needy team in the CFL elsewhere doesn't have any quarterbacks who are ready to come up. Well, I say to that, okay, well, if you're going to sign three quarterbacks, you're going to probably have to cut one or two who might be good. Or if you're not going to be able to sign all three, then you can trade the rights to one of those players to a more QB needy team. Or we've also seen it, this has happened many times, where players will say, you know what, I'm on this team's neg list, I've talked to the coach, I don't really want to go there. Either it's not an ideological fit with the coach, it's not a geographical fit, right? The team is too far away. I'm an East Coast guy, I don't want to go play in BC, or I'm a West Coast guy, I don't want to go play in Montreal, things like that. And I think that the neg list system has all of the different things you need in it to fix those issues, right? If you're Montreal and a guy says, yeah, I'm never coming to play for you, I'm a West Coast guy, well, you can drop them and pick somebody else up on your neg list. Or if it's a marquee player who other teams would want, you could say, okay, we'll trade your rights. We've seen neg list players get traded for meaningful assets. Vernon Adams Jr., probably the most notable one, first round pick, I believe it was, that Jim Popp gave up for the Alouettes to acquire his rights 10 years ago from the BC Lions. The irony being, of course, that he was later traded to BC for a first round pick. But regardless, I like this system. My issue with the American draft is so many guys from the United States will come up depending on the fit, right? Geographically with the coaching staff, and drafting obviously could limit that pool, right? I mean, the CFL draft is already a ton of work. It's already got a ton of moving pieces. And if you're going to do the American draft, like do you do it in May as well? And now you've got 30 guys coming to camp who, you know, just got on the roster in the last week? Or do you do it in January, not knowing who's going to potentially get an NFL shot or not get an NFL shot? So I like the Negla system. I do think an American draft could be interesting, but I personally think that the current system works really well with drafting Canadians and globals and relying on the Neglists to bring American talent to the Canadian Football League.
The American draft would be very tricky because at least with the Canadian draft, I guess we'll call it, you have an idea that the majority of those players are actually coming out that year. And yes, we know like Seth Hundeby, as an example, will go through the process, still be drafted and say, I want to go back to school for a year, finish my engineering degree in this case, and then I'm going to come out and play football. Because at that point, then teams can put an actual valuation on the players. If you had an American draft, you don't necessarily know that players are for sure coming up. So I'm open to the idea. There are some people in the league who think the negotiation lists are archaic, but it does serve that function where you can take players on and off all the time and you find out, hey, this guy is done playing football, or he thought he might want to play and he's not going to play anymore. If you have an American draft and you spend a first round pick on a player who never comes up here, you're really, really limiting your hit rate. And I think that would be difficult, but I'm open to hearing the idea. And I think part of the idea behind that and some of the other things that are going to be talked about is creating more public interest. If you had an American draft, perhaps that's something that CFL fans or people who are not fans of the CFL could get into. For example, and the Riders just dropped him off the Neglist, but Trinidad Chambliss, who led Ole Miss to the college football playoff semifinal, if he was in an American draft for the CFL and actually going to come to play in the Canadian Football League, that would draw some interest. So I'm curious to hear how that might work. But as you alluded to, Hodge, the Canadian draft is already a lot of work in and of itself. And to add an American draft on top of that, where you have limited, literally, a number of people that you could have on your football operations staff and your budget, that would be a massive undertaking because you can get the CFL draft list down to, like, you know, people have told me in the past, like 100, 150 gradable players, like legitimate players in a given year that the team should actually put their time and effort into grading and doing all the background research that they do. The Americans, there's literally like hundreds, if not thousands of them that you would potentially have to do that for. So I like the idea on its face, but we need to dive deeper in to see how that would work.
Well, let me paint a little picture here. So my concern is, like, right now, let's say you're the Hamilton Tiger Cats, which by all accounts is one of the, if not the best run organization in the CFL. We'll get into that a little bit at the report cards. But if you're a linebacker who played at, I'll just pull university out, Auburn, and you know, you've had some NFL shots and you're currently a free agent and it's looking like you're not getting another NFL look and you're 27, you're not sure if you really want to go into the quote unquote real world yet, or if you want to keep playing, your agent can get in touch with you and say, hey, the Hamilton Tiger Cats are looking to sign you. And you might say, you know what? I don't know what a Hamilton Tiger Cat is. That doesn't sound interesting to me. I'm just going to move on. Well, then the agent can say, well, but like, I know their director of player personnel. Well, we go back 20 years. Would you be willing to chat with them? The player says, yeah, sounds good. Well, then once the Hamilton Tiger Cats contact the player directly, they can say, hey, look, this is what our coaching staff is. This is what our locker rooms look like. This is what the pay scale would be. This is what our actual venue looks like. These are the amenities we have in the locker room. This is what we offer for families. If you need babysitting during games, but et cetera, right? All of a sudden, it might not happen instantaneously, but over the course of days, months, or weeks, or dare I say months, you could potentially sell that player on going, you know what? my initial impression of the CFL was this is just a second-rate league that's not worth it. But actually, now that I've seen the examples of how this team treats players like real professionals and how much this team actually means to the community and how we're actually going to have 20, 25,000 people at all these games, now this might actually be something I want to do, right? There's almost like a recruitment-like element to it, not that differently from when these guys are coming out of high school and collegiate teams need to compete for their recruitment, right? The CFL can be a little bit like that. Whereas if you just go to a general draft, right, and you don't have teams individually trying to recruit these players, but instead it's just, hey, do you want to go to the CFL, yes or no? My fear, my hesitation is fewer players are going to come up, or potentially if they do, they'll do it with like less knowledge or like a less informed decision, because it doesn't, in my opinion, fit in anybody's best interest for players to come up not knowing what they're getting into, not knowing, okay, what are the amenities like? What is the food like? What is the pay like? What about my family, right? You might have a wife and two kids. Like, what are all these details, right? I'd rather the teams do the recruiting aspect rather than the league do the recruiting aspect. Because if I'm a team and I want to recruit a player who's going to be in the draft, well, I don't want to recruit them, sell them on the CFL just to have them get drafted by my rival. Like, I'm not going to be trying to get guys up to the CFL just if I'm going to get my pocket picked, right? So that's the reason I'm skeptical of an American draft. But again, I'm not completely against it. I'm open to it. The other thing I really want and I'm excited for is among the rule change discussion was going to be a conversation about quarterback sneaks, which I feel have become far too commonplace in the CFL. It's not good for fantasy to have backup running backs getting 10, 12, 15 touchdowns a year.
Backup and quarterbacks. What
did I say?
Running backs.
Oh, my apologies. Backup quarterbacks getting all these rushing touchdowns. And I don't think anybody's really excited for second and one when the short yardage QB comes in. It's kind of a dead play. So to me, I would be very interested to see what the CFL comes up with in these discussions to potentially limit QB sneaks. But regardless, we're excited for the winter meetings. Monday is going to be a ton of avails with head coaches and general managers across the CFL. So stay tuned to Three Down Nation for all the latest that they have to say. So it's going to be some great conversations.
And if the fans have questions they want us to potentially ask, hit us up on socials or leave a comment on the YouTube channel and we'll give it some thought. I think that's part of the reason why the CFL and Stuart Johnson have published the agenda is because he's open to hearing these ideas. And I just want to have one more thought on the American draft. I suppose there could be a way that it might work if you had a player pool where the players actually declared and said, okay,
yes,
like I'm ready to come to Canada. But even then, as you laid out, I don't think it's quite the same. So I'm very curious to hear what some of those possibilities might be around the American draft and some of the other ways that Stuart Johnston and the smart football people who are getting together for the winter meetings believe they can innovate in this league. I'm not saying that we should just keep the negotiation list because that's the way it's always been. We need to be thinking about innovation from a league standpoint as a whole so that it can survive and ideally thrive in the future.
And also, you can only claim the rights to 40 Americans at any given time. There's like 1,000 guys, right, who are available and could potentially help a CFL team, right? American talent pool is an ocean, whereas the CFL, like Canadian talent pool, is much smaller just because we have far fewer Canadians than we have Americans. So that's why I like the current system the way that it is. I don't see there being a big lack of American talent that's available, but again, we'll see. And also, it should be noted in previous years, these Monday avails have happened with CFL head coaches and GMs. This year, Stuart Johnston is also making himself available on Wednesday. So we're also getting an extra opportunity to speak with the commissioner. So if you have questions, feel free to send them. But if it's a question for Stuart, just be respectful because I've seen some tweets. It's like, I don't want, even if I wanted to ask this question, I would. That is not fair. But I digress. Should be a good week in the CFL, which is great. Because second week of January, it's not a normal time you'd think about for the CFL. So it should be good. Speaking of Several CFL players have signed NFL contracts for 2026, including returner Isaiah Wooden and punter Nick Constantinou going to the Cleveland Browns, defensive back Robert Carter Jr. going to the Indianapolis Colts, linebacker Jacob Roberts and defensive lineman Jalen Hutchings going to the Minnesota Vikings, receiver Dante Myers going to the Cincinnati Bengals, and receiver Damian Alford going to the New Orleans Saints. Which player do you think has the best chance of sticking with his new team?
If I have to pick just one, it has to be Damian Alford. That's no slight to the other players that are signing NFL contracts and that could potentially sign. You know, I think, I'm trying to think of the other guys who might be in the mix here. Like, there's a chance that Devin Vereshchuk could. So we'll have this conversation perhaps at a later date with some other guys that are involved. But to date, and based on the list that you just gave me, I think it's Damian Alford because he has legitimate NFL traits, like the size. He's just under 6'6". He's well over, I believe, 200 pounds. And he runs in the 4.4s, laser timed in the 40. Like, NFL traits, can win at that level. He's going to have to stay healthy. You're not going to make it the club in the tub as a futures player in the NFL. He's going to need to stay on the roster throughout the offseason through organized training activities and all the rest to get to training camp to have a chance to earn that roster spot. But I really think the odds-on favorite would have to be Damian Alford. That's no slight to some other high-level players in the group that you laid out. Hodge, I think Jalen Hutchings perhaps could have a legitimate possibility. But for CFL fans, when they look at this and they're assessing the opportunity, you got to go check the depth chart. Because more and more, these CFL players that are Americans that are going to the NFL and the Canadians that are going to the NFL, when they have multiple offers, they're being very smart about it in terms of, okay, which teams really want me? And then does that sort of time up with the way that the depth chart looks, right? If you have a stacked depth chart at receiver, which by all accounts the Saints don't, then you don't want to go to that team. But I think that's another reason why I believe that Damian Alford has the best chance to stick with the Saints.
I think Alford's a good answer because he is such a specimen, right? Like, some body types in the NFL are a dime a dozen, and Damian Alford does not fit into that mold. His size, you mentioned it, a smidge under 6'6". I think he's 220 pounds, and the speed that he ran, like, he had no production in his last collegiate season at Utah, but I still thought after he ran as well as he did at the pro day, I think it was the Big 12 pro day he did last year, I still thought, okay, this guy's going to get an NFL shot just because there are very few human beings on this planet who are that size with that speed. And what he showed in 2025 was he can be a productive receiver. He had almost 600 yards as a rookie, one of the top deep threats in the CFL, obviously a mismatch for opposing defensive backs. So I like that answer. I would also highlight Robert Carter Jr. in part because of how young he is. I do think that his height is going to work against him a little bit. He's a smidge under 5'9", but we're talking about a guy who improved dramatically, I thought, over the course of the 2025 season. Obviously had the best play of the year with that unbelievable one-handed interception off Bolivar Mitchell. But this is a guy, he's not turning 23 until next month. Like, he's 22 years old. He's barely out of Robert Morris, but he's also got a year of professional football under his belt. You almost wonder if he's going to be seen almost like a Quantez Stiggers, where it's like he's young enough that he's essentially another draft pick, but he's got a full year of pro experience, which I do think could be attractive to the Colts when it comes time to cut down that roster. So I'm with you, Dunk. I think that all these guys have a chance. Historically, by the way, the odds of sticking, I would say right now there's seven guys who have gone from CFL to NFL, which is pretty par for the course. What would you say? The norm would be maybe three guys sticking, whether it's active or practice, maybe one on the active, two on the practice, four get cut.
It would be in that range, yeah.
Around that range. So, like, That's the way I see things sitting right now. But that's not to say that Isaiah Wooden or Nick Constantinou or any of these other guys couldn't stick. You never know, right? Elliot Brown, for instance, I don't think was a guy last year we were sitting here going, oh, he's going to stick with the Cardinals for sure. And yet he stuck all year. He's back on their – he was finished the year on the practice roster, and he's already signed a futures for 2026. So you never know who sticks, and good luck to all these guys. Congrats to them for getting these contracts. And honestly, I know some CFL fans are disappointed to see these guys go, but I also think them going to the NFL is a great advertisement for the Canadian Football League. If you're a player in the situation we just talked about, where you're sitting at home, you're out of NFL opportunities, you're going, man, do I hang them up? Do I go sell insurance? Do I go get into coaching? Do I go, you know, do whatever it is I'm planning to do post-football, or do I go up to the CFL? Seeing all these guys sign contracts could be the difference in saying, yeah, you know what? I'm gonna stay in shape. I'm gonna go to camp in May, see if I can get onto a CFL active roster in 2026. So I think it's a net positive for the CFL for sure.
It definitely is a net positive, and we can't leave the UFL out of it, because the UFL trumpets players coming to play in their league and then going to the NFL. And the CFL needs that to entice the vast amount of Americans that come to Canada to play in the Canadian Football League, because you can come to Canada and, you know, make whatever around the minimum salary is going to be. Let's call it, you know, $80,000 if you hit some bonuses on your rookie deal, and set yourself up to make hundreds of thousands of dollars potentially. Look at a guy like Jalen Hutchings, okay? He's in a position where he signed a contract with the Minnesota Vikings because of what he's done in the Canadian Football League. And if he does come back to the CFL, which the odds say there's a pretty good chance, but you never know. The Alex Singletons of the world, I think about, you know, Delvin Bro even. There's a bunch of examples of guys going down there and not coming back. Cam Wake would probably be top among them. But if he does come back to the CFL, yeah, I mentioned him right off the top.
Oh, thank you.
Well, there's some others. If he does come back to the CFL, he's going to garner, you know, probably upwards of $200,000, especially considering the new salary cap money. So I think it's a great way to entice players to come up here. You don't make American dollars, and you might not make, you know, the 70-ish thousand dollars US that you can make in a 10-week season in the UFL, but the upside is there in the CFL if you become a star, and then you can also get that opportunity in the NFL. And I saw JC Abbott in particular was going back and forth with, I think it was one fan on Twitter, saying the NFL should pay these CFL teams to take the players. Well, it should be known that the majority of the scouts, Hodge, that we talk to are treated very well by NFL teams when they go to training camp or are there during the season to scout players who are on the back end of the roster or who are on practice rosters. And they get great information to get a feel for, okay, you know, do you think this guy's in your future plans? Where is he at? Because that informs decisions with what we just talked about in terms of the negotiation list. So it's not like the NFL just picks the players and then treats the CFL people and personnel that come through their buildings like dirt. That's not the case. And the NFL doesn't have to do that. So I think that the NFL teams, at least the feedback that I've heard, understand that there's highly skilled players in the Canadian Football League. You know, a number, if not a bunch, as Chad Johnson said, that could play in the NFL. And they get that there's a relationship to be had there with the CFL scouts. Because if the NFL guys are bringing these players in for workouts, they're going to go to those CFL teams to hear about what they're actually like behind the scenes to inform those decisions. So it works both ways, and it definitely, definitely, definitely is a net benefit for the CFL. If American players didn't think that they could come to the CFL and perhaps get a shot at the NFL or get another shot at the NFL, I think we would lose a decent amount of very highly skilled players who, for the most part, turn into stars in our league and stay here for the majority of their careers. There are the outliers, like Hodge said, right? Alex Singleton, Cam Wake, and there's another whole other list. Delvin Bro, Quantez Stiggers most recently. There are a number of guys who have made it down there. Who's the Atlanta Falcons DB that played with the Bombers?
Oh, D. Alford. Greg Van Roten is another one. He's played like 10 years on NFL offensive lines after being with the Argonauts for a couple years. Like, there's lots of guys.
And it's a great pathway back and forth. So there is some give and take and understanding there with the NFL teams. And I don't think that people talk about it much because it's kind of boring. But in general, the CFL scouts that go down there, especially, you know, the ones who are doing the scouting around training camp, because you're trying to get a sense, okay, is this guy going to be on the 53-man active roster? Is he going to be on the practice roster? Is he just going to, you know, miss out on the cut? Well, perhaps he's a guy we want to put on the neg list. That's highly valuable to these CFL teams in terms of them finding the next wave of American talent. Well, so the NFL teams, from what I've heard, have been welcoming.
And I get all that, but also, like, if I'm assistant manager at McDonald's and then Burger King hires me as a manager, like, Burger King doesn't owe McDonald's anything. Like, I don't understand the argument that, like, the NFL wants CFL players. They should be compensating. It's like, or people can just do the jobs they want to do. And that's how all life works. Like, it's collectively bargained in the CFL that you can leave for an NFL opportunity. So what's the problem? All parties have agreed to this. So I don't understand that question, but I do agree that it is a nice symbiotic ecosystem. The NFL has the right to sign CFL players who they want to sign or work out, whatever. And absolutely, CFL players benefit from NFL teams developing talent that eventually comes up north. So yeah, I think it's a good system.
The CFLPA released its second annual team report cards. The Edmonton Elks jumped four spots up the rankings with an aggregate grade, let's call it, of B- up from a D+ in 2024. That's quite a jump. The Ottawa Redblacks and Montreal Alouettes finished in the bottom third after their grades dipped from 2024, though it was the BC Lions that finished last, which is a shocker to me. Hodge, what surprised you the most?
Well, it was that BC Lions finishing last, and I think that's a great reason for these report cards to exist, right? Amar Dolman is investing a lot of money, and our guy JC Abbott has written a great article about the plans for the training facility that the Lions use in Surrey and all of the upgrades that are being done there. We've even got mock-ups of the images of what it's going to look like, which is really neat. But I think sometimes, right, it's best to maybe test narratives that are publicly accepted and just saying something like, oh, well, Amar Dolman is the best owner in the Canadian Football League. It's like, well, maybe instead of just repeating that over and over again, we should actually ask players how they feel, right? Or do so preferably in a way where they're protected. For instance, the BC Lions gave nutrition and diet an F in this report card when being able to anonymously provide positive or negative feedback on the team. Players, if it's not anonymous, have no reason to be honest. Everybody's afraid of getting cut. Everybody's afraid of being scapegoated. So I was a little disappointed that the turnout wasn't better. Last year, it was an average of 55 players per team who filled out the survey, which is a tremendous backing. I think this year it was only 42. Still a good sample size, but I would have rather seen a higher percentage of participation. That being said, that is still basically a full active roster. Injured players and practice roster players were still also, by the way, asked to fill out the survey. So it could have been higher per team, but still 42 is still a solid number. And that F in food and nutrition was really what killed the BC Lions. They didn't have anything lower than a C- elsewhere, but they did get they did get a D+ in treatment of families. That obviously has to be improved. They got a C- in training camp. They got a C- in facilities and equipment. And they got a C- in ownership and business operations. Now, ownership and business operations are together. So it's not necessarily saying that the BC Lions are giving Amar Dolman a C-, but clearly the BC Lions are not the front runner when it comes to how to operate a Canadian Football League team, at least relative to its counterparts. Are there things they're doing well? Absolutely. They got a B+ for coaching staff under first-year head coach Buck Pierce. They got a B for strength and conditioning, B- for therapy and medical staff. So they're doing some things well, but this is a great opportunity for the Lions to say, okay, how can we be more competitive? Because we saw that work Last year, the Edmonton Elks got annihilated on this report card last year. They got several good marks this year. A minus in facilities and equipment. They got an A plus in team travel, the only A plus that was awarded anywhere. And they got a B for treatment of families and a B for strength and conditioning. Huge improvements. It hasn't quite paid off yet on the field for the Elks, but these are the types of adjustments that one would think off the field will eventually pay dividends on the field, whether it's players having better feeling bodies, healthier bodies, it's players being more likely to sign in free agency, knowing that they're going to be treated right off the field, or things of that nature. So I really like this initiative from the CFLPA. The grades are super interesting, and credit to the Edmonton Elks for bouncing back. We'll see if the BC Lions can do the same when these report cards are done again 1 year from now.
On the high side, credit to the Hamilton Tiger Cats for getting the top overall grade at a B plus. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders number two with a solid B there. But Hodge, you know what I was most disappointed about? There was no funny quotes. Nothing like, you know, no hot breakfast available in Calgary that people can put in, oh, I don't know, a schedule release video game. Nothing that anybody can joke about. That was what was missing. So perhaps, and I know that these are kind of somewhat edited behind the scenes, the CFLPA wanted to be classy in how they go about this, and I definitely think that's the case, but you know, I was missing some of those quotes, you know, especially about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the small plane that some of the players were talking about in terms of how they were traveling to away games. There's nothing that jumped out to me from a quote perspective. The grades are all fine, well, and good. You laid it out well, but I was missing the juicy quotes. It's anonymous players. You might as well say it if you feel it.
I don't disagree with you. I do like it when you get juicy quotes. One interesting thing was and this is not a reflection on the Elks, but the accommodations in Edmonton for visiting players was the most commented issue amongst the surveyed membership in 2025. Because when CFL teams visit cities, I believe they all stay at the same facility, the same hotel. And I believe that's done basically as a cost measure issue, right? Instead of every visiting team saying, hey, we're going to stay at this hotel or that hotel, they can kind of collectively bargain almost in a way. I've been told by a source that the hotel is the Chateau Lacombe at Edmonton. Also, apparently the hotel used to be the Westin downtown where the combine has been scheduled for 2026. It was also in 2023. So maybe the plan is to go back to the Westin at some point. I don't know why the Westin was moved away from, but obviously this hotel at Edmonton is not something that visiting teams like. We'll see if maybe that can be improved. I mean, I'm personally not picky about hotels. If the bed is big and it doesn't have bed bugs, I'm pretty much happy. But I can't speak for everybody. So I also have never been to this hotel at Edmonton that apparently lacks all these amenities. But super interesting report card. I'm excited to see how teams improve over the course of the next year.
Let's highlight the Ticats for a second because, you know, people will say that we criticize, which we often do, but perhaps we should, you know, highlight the elite. And in this case, one anonymous player deemed Hamilton the class of the CFL and said they go beyond the call of duty, choosing to make improvements despite an already high ranking in 2024. In particular, that player cited a Thanksgiving dinner the club hosted for all players and their families. So that's great to see and is essentially why the Canadian Football League Players Association, led by President Solomon L. Mimian, wanted to start this report card initiative, because it actually causes teams to make changes and holds them accountable for how they're treating essentially the union members or the workers in this union. So I think that that initiative has worked from Ella Mimian and the PA's perspective. So kudos to the Ticats for being the class of the CFL in that regard. The one area, Hodge, that I will say, or another area that stuck out to me, was the marketing money, I believe. It said the availability of player appearances and the way they were compensated were frequent complaints across the league. In Saskatchewan, for example, they were not offered at the rate expected and were very slow. One Lions player said that they were paid extremely under the market rate and not compensated for travel to events. A member of the Red Blacks said they were not given the opportunity to earn that money, with another stating that things were especially scarce in the off season. So, I mean, even us as a publication, Hodge, we've started to include that marketing money in the hard money that the players get as if it's almost guaranteed. But when you read those comments, I think that definitely leaves some dollars to be desired from that aspect for the players who think they're going to get X amount of dollars in marketing money in a given year.
True. And I do think it does depend. I've been told this by sources. There are some contracts where you can say, okay, there's going to be $20,000 of marketing money, and that money is going to be paid out regardless of whether the marketing is performed. In other words, if the player does enough marketing appearances to earn the $20,000, that's great and that's done. If they don't, then whatever money they're paid that's left over becomes against the salary cap. It basically is treated as an off-season bonus. There's also players who do not have that guarantee in their contract. So if they don't actually do the marketing appearances, they do not get that $20,000. And I know listeners might be going, well, then they just have to not be lazy and get out and get on the, you know, get off their butts in the off season and go do these appearances. Well, true. But if you're expecting to do, let's say, 20 appearances over the course of the off season and the team only calls you to do two, well, there's not much that you can really do about your goal of trying to earn that $20,000. You weren't really given that opportunity. So that is, I think, what these players are talking about. And again, from what I understand, it does depend on the contract. Some of the contracts guarantee the marketing money, essentially turning it into extra salary or bonus if the marketing is not actually performed. Some teams with some contracts will not do that. And they'll say, if you want to earn the marketing money, you have to actually get out there and do the appearances. So it just depends on the player, depends on the team, depends on the situation, the team standing in the community, all that different stuff. But marketing can also mean lots of different things, right? It can mean going and reading to kids at a school. It can mean recording a silly YouTube video for the team, right? It can mean lots of different stuff. It is kind of a weird burgeoning market, especially when you throw in some of the social media influencing kind of stuff that some players do. Your posts are probably not worth much if you've got 100 followers, but if you've got 300,000 followers, your posts could be worth a lot of money. So I appreciate that there's some confusion around this, and I appreciate that some players might be frustrated, but it is what it is.
It needs to get cleaned up, ultimately.
Well, yes, but also it's hard to make hard and fast rules about an industry that's changing so rapidly. So, like, I agree that more ironclad rules would be better, but it's also tough when this is a new and kind of changing and developing thing to make rules that are ironclad and also fair. So I don't know what the perfect solution is, or if there is a perfect solution.
The league should be talking about it at the winter meetings with everybody that's there and try to figure it out in some way.
It's not on the agenda, but they did note in the agenda that this is a non-exhaustive list. So it's possible that they're talking about more other things. We don't know. The Western Mustangs have hired Michael Faulds away from the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks to become their new head coach. How did this come about? And do you think Laurier has the right to be upset?
It came about because Greg Marshall, the legendary U Sports head coach, both at McMaster and Western, decided to retire. And I do think people at Laurier have the right to be upset because people should feel whatever emotions that they want to feel. But like, this was going to happen. Okay. Michael Faulds played five seasons at quarterback for the Western Mustangs from 2005 to 2009, won two Yates Cups there. Greg Marshall did not allow anybody in his era to wear the number three. That was the number that Faulds wore when he played with the Mustangs. And Faulds was actually asked if he was going to allow a player or players in the future to potentially wear number three, but he said he hasn't got that far yet. But that's how much he meant to Greg Marshall. And I think overall for the institution as a whole, he's their all-time leading passer, in terms of passing yards, with over 10,800 yards in his illustrious career there, which I believe ranks third all time. But man, it's hard to find those U Sports all-time stats. So I'll try to get those for you later on. I do think, Hodge, that this is a great marketing piece for U Sports Football, especially when Faulds, who I'm told is going to make his way back to Laurier during the 2026 OUA season. I know it's probably not going to happen, but that game needs to be on TV, okay? Because there are some Golden Hawks players and fans and people on campus over there that are feeling some type of way about Faulds leaving. And it's a difficult situation to navigate, okay? So we have an exclusive interview with Michael Faulds up on our podcast feed, be it on the YouTube channel or wherever you want to listen, plus an article up on 3 Down Nation. And he essentially said he wanted to keep it very quiet because after Marshall retired, the Mustangs opened it up for applications. That closed in late December. And Faulds wanted to make a decision before all of the student athletes for both programs came back to campus on, what was Monday? January
5th.
Okay. He wanted to make that decision, but in the interest of keeping it quiet, he didn't want to call a team meeting at Laurier and let the Golden Hawks know that he was leaving. So that creates a situation where you literally have Michael Faulds, who when the student athletes at Laurier left for the holiday break, was their Golden Hawks head coach. And then on Monday, January 5th, he's on campus at Western wearing a different shade of purple and the Mustangs logo without having talked to anybody, or I should say the players at Laurier, face-to-face. He did tell me exclusively that he poured his heart out in an email to the Laurier players, coaches, and administration over there with the Golden Hawks. He's very appreciative of his 13-year run there with Laurier. And the fact that the Golden Hawks gave him his first head coaching job, he was an offensive coordinator at York University for 3 seasons. And Laurier took a chance on him, and it definitely paid off in spades. Peter Baxter led that committee, I believe, while he was the athletic director there at Laurier, among a number of other people who had input. So it definitely paid off for the Hawks. But there was always that talk behind the scenes at Laurier that, okay, when Greg Marshall retires, because Father Time is unbeaten, is Michael Faulds just going to leave us? And that's what's happened here. But also, you know, how can you fault the guy? There were some comparisons to Lane Kiffin, and I asked Faulds directly about that, and he can appreciate it. And he did answer, you know, a number of, I believe, fair and tough questions directly when I asked him. But he said the difference with this scenario is that Lane Kiffin didn't play quarterback for LSU. Lane right. Kiffin's wife didn't go to LSU, where Michael Faulds met his wife, Stacy, at Western. She's from London. That's where her family is. She was a cheerleader. It's that classic movie stereotype. Quarterback meets cheerleader and lives a happily ever after. They have 2 kids, Chloe and Lucas, I believe they are. And Faulds even went to them and said, okay, are you guys ready to go through this, to move from Kitchener-Waterloo to London? So I want to take the majority of that at face value. But we'd be remiss if we didn't mention some other factors here, Hodge, and I'll try to make this concise so you can have your say on this. Greg Marshall conveniently retired just after the potential transfer deadline for first and second year athletes. So that's a new rule in U Sports where if you're in your first and second year, you don't really like what's going on, you can move institutions without sitting out for a year. And also the fact that this happened so quickly, I think led some people to believe that perhaps, and this is pure speculation, this had been in the works, right? That Greg Marshall and Michael Faulds being so close and Marshall wanting to leave that program in a great place after he walked off into the sunset and away from U Sports could have talked about this. That's just complete speculation. But I think that's part of the reason why some of the people at the Golden Hawks are feeling some type of way. Now, let's talk about onwards and upwards, okay? Western is still a great program, 7-1, even though Laurier absolutely dominated them 60-13 in the final game of the 2025 regular season. But make no mistake, Michael Faulds left a program that is not as good as the one that he built at Laurier, which is the reason the Lane Kiffin comparison comes up. And it's an easy one because it's topical. And also, as Folds pointed out, it's rare for an OUA football head coach to leave one institution in that position and go to another one. So before I dive into sort of future here Hodge and Taylor Elgersma's comments, I'll let you have your say.
Well, that's the takeaway for me, is that Michael Folds and the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks absolutely blew the doors off the Western Mustangs this past season, completely humiliated them, and then didn't even get another chance to dog walk them in the playoffs because Western choked against University of Guelph, drank in the first round, losing as the 2 seed to the 7 seed. Like, the Mustangs, I'm not saying they're in the toilet, that would be unfair, but the Mustangs, who are traditionally by far and away the number one program in the OUA, are currently a defined number two. And I think that by bringing Michael Folds in, the message that Western has sent to their students and their alumni and all of their stakeholders is, yeah, we are actually number one, and we're going to get back there right away. And on the one hand, there's something nice about that. There's something poetic about Michael Folds coming back. There's something, like Western wouldn't be Western if it wasn't number one. And I think Michael Folds is going to get them back there. At the same time, it was really fun and exciting to have a new kind of burgeoning powerhouse here with Taylor Elgersma. I think maybe the thought was, oh, once he's gone, the Golden Hawks are going to go back to, being not a second-rate team, but a team that, is kind of the little brother in the rivalry with Western. And then they bring in Cal Wither as a transfer, and the team got better in 2025 relative to what it was in 2024. So on the one hand, I like it. On the other hand, I don't like it. Like, sticking at Laurier would have been great and to see a new burgeoning powerhouse. But also, Michael Folds is a grown man, and he's entitled to coach where he wants to coach. In a way, yeah, he did make a 5-year commitment to Laurier, but we also don't know what the terms of that extension were. If in the extension it clearly said, I can leave for another school at any time, then he's well within his right to go. And it's also not like he got to Laurier 1 year ago or 2 years ago. He put 13 years into his tenure with the Golden Hawks. So this is not a mercenary-like head coach who's moving this school, then that school, and is bouncing around constantly. This is a guy who did put 13 years of his heart, his soul, his blood, his sweat, and his tears into the program at Laurier, and he'll now do the same at Western for probably even longer than that. So again, there's parts of this I like. There's parts of this I don't like. I just wish that the athletes had been informed earlier, but I also appreciate why it didn't happen that way.
The best part to me is the star power of it, right? You have Taylor Elgersma feeling some type of way, in a respectful way, about his former head coach leaving Wilfrid Laurier, going to Western. And I think this is something that, both schools, the OUA and U Sports, could really hype up for the return game and whenever these teams, essentially play in the future. You mentioned the contract there, Hodge. From what I was told, it's very simple. Right? It's a 5-year contract where Michael Folds, as you mentioned, if he decided to leave, he's simply out of that contract, goes and signs another new 5-year agreement with the Western Mustangs. There's no buyout or guaranteed money like they have in NCAA football. We're not quite at that money level. And I say quite, it's a major gap. But there definitely is a pay raise there, especially if you look at the latest Sunshine list that we all have access to. In 2024, Folds earned just under $140,000 as head coach with the Golden Hawks. In that same season, Greg Marshall collected over $225,000. So it's about an $85,000 possible pay bump. We won't know exactly until the Sunshine List comes out after the 2026 season, but that's also nothing to shake a stick at, too. If you're Michael Folds sitting there, and he literally told me this, that you're thinking you're going to coach at least until you're 60 at Western, and you're getting approximately $85,000 more per year, potentially, and again, we'll see what the details are, that's definitely helpful for your family moving forward. As for the Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks, I don't necessarily think that this is the demise of that football program. And Taylor Elgersma is definitely going to tell you about it and feels very passionate still, which I like. I think we need more passion however that's built around the institutions that we go to from not only a post-secondary perspective in Canada, but even our high schools that we go to, it's just not the same passion. And I hate comparing it, but as people in the United States. So I think it's great that Taylor Elgersma feels this way. He was helping out the team in 2025 in between NFL workouts after he went to training camp with the Green Bay Packers. And he said flat out that Michael Foltz was not the culture at Laurier, that he helped build the program to where it is, certainly gave him his flowers. They still have a relationship and a definite respect among competitors now because Michael Foltz has gone to the rival school. But Elgersma believes that the culture is built at Laurier and that they can continue it. And it seems like the most likely way would be with an internal hiring, either being Ron Van Moerkirk, the defensive coordinator who spent around 30 years on and off of the program there. He was a longtime teacher in the Waterloo District School Board. And then the other great internal candidate would be Todd Galloway, who was the offensive coordinator. And both these guys have other titles, but I'm just essentially shrinking it down. And Elgersma told me that Todd Galloway literally called every single play during his career at Laurier, including during that decisive 2024 Yates Cup win by Laurier over Western. So Todd Galloway has been an interim head coach before at Guelph. He went 5-3 in 2018 and got the Griffins to the Yates Cup, actually where they lost to the Western Mustangs. So he has that little bit of experience. But you hear the way that Elgersma and some other people around the Golden Hawks program talk about either of those coaches, and I think it's likely going to be one of the two of them. It would definitely be an upset if it was some of the other coaches who have Golden Hawks ties, but I think it's worth mentioning that Stefan Potasik was a three-time All-Canadian receiver with Wilfrid Laurier, went on to be a first-round pick in the CFL draft, and he was the leading receiver in receptions, yards, and touchdowns, receiving touchdowns, in program history until one Ethan Jordan came along. There's also Mark Soria, who's at the University of Guelph. He played the tail end of his career at Laurier, spent some time there with Michael Foltz as an offensive coordinator as well, that I think could be intriguing. Kevin McNeil, who's at the University of Waterloo at the current moment, played as a star linebacker for Wilfrid Laurier as that program was ramping up. He didn't win a Vanier Cup there as a player in 2005, but he's part of that coaching staff as well. So there are some great candidates with Laurier Golden Hawks ties. Corey Grant's another one who I should throw out there, played in the CFL for a number of years, won a Grey Cup in 2007, I believe, with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I think he also won a Grey Cup in 1999 with the Tiger Cats. He's the head coach at Carleton University. That would be someone you think Laurier would be intrigued to talk to, or, you know, these guys would at least potentially put their applications in. But I think when it comes down to it, to hire from within, create some stability within that Laurier football program. And as you alluded to, with them bringing Cal Wither in there, I don't necessarily know if they were a better team in 2024. It was definitely a different team. Cal Wither was very prolific. And if he stays there, which seems like it's likely at this point, but there's some people talking about, you know, some NCAA interest in Cal Wither. I think there's some great upside to stay in that similar offense with Todd Galloway. But if you elevate one of those guys, you know, I wonder if the next question becomes, okay, if Todd Galloway's the head coach, do you have to bring in an offensive coordinator? If Ron Van Moerkirk is the head coach, do you have to bring in a defensive coordinator? So those conversations are ongoing, and we'll ultimately see who Laurier hires as its next head football coach.
You make a fair point about the seasons. And the reason I said that was because both years, the Golden Hawks finished 8-0. But in 2025, they scored 49 more points than they did in 2024. And they also allowed 22 fewer points than they did in 2024. That being said, they did win the Yates Cup and the UTEC Bowl in 2024. They lost the Yates Cup in 2025. So the regular season was the same record. Point differential was much better, but the playoff performance was much worse. So fair point. Regardless, dominant the last 2 years, especially so head-to-head against Western in 25. And we'll see what happens with the Golden Hawks. Certainly this has made what was already a good rivalry all the better. So time for the first Hodges Heritage moment of 2026. On this day in 1999, O.J. Santiago made his NFL postseason debut in a 2018 victory over the San Francisco 49ers. The Whitby, Ontario native started at tight end for the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl 3 weeks later, making one reception on four targets. Santiago would play 10 seasons in the NFL with seven different teams, catching 81 passes for 1,041 yards and nine touchdowns. 11 years after appearing in the Super Bowl, he also came back to professional football, signed with the Montreal Alouettes for a relatively short-lived but still notable return to professional football. Dunk, do you have any memories of OJ Santiago?
For sure, bro. Doing the Dirty Bird in that era with the Atlanta Falcons, that was amazing. Jamal Anderson was on that team. I think Chris Chandler was their quarterback, if I'm remembering right. It was fun to watch. And then to find out that, you know, there was a Canadian tight end at the time when I was just a little wiener, let's call it. It was pretty cool.
And the connection to the Alouettes was Mark Trestman. So Santiago was with the Raiders when Mark Trestman was that team's offensive coordinator.
He came back to
play with Mark Trestman. And yeah, the Falcons are not a cool NFL team, but that was like one of the very small moments in franchise history with the Dirty Bird, the success, going to the Super Bowl. The Falcons were cool for a quick moment in time. And it's neat that OJ Santiago was part of that era.
Who did they play in that Super Bowl?
The Broncos.
That's right. John Elway's last game?
I can't remember if it was last or second last, but it was one of those.
Seems like that's when they went back to back.
I think it was the second one. It might have been the first.
Okay. Well,
no, actually, it would have been the second because 2000, the Ravens won the Super Bowl.
There it is. Stat boy got your answer. Let's get to the 3-minute drill. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have somewhat surprisingly released East Division All-Star defensive tackle Casey Sales. Why do you think this happened?
Well, my immediate thought was he must have an offseason roster bonus coming up, but the team was not willing to pay. Sources have led me to believe that's not true. He did have a report and pass bonus due, but that wasn't due until May. So timing is definitely interesting. His numbers were down in 2025, but Casey Sales, 30 years old, still one of the league's best interior defenders. I don't think it'll take that long for him to find another team. The Ottawa Redblacks have named Jeff Reinbold as their new special teams coordinator, replacing Rick Campbell. Is that an upgrade?
Ryan Dinwiddie sure seems to think so. He said that Reinbold's special teams, when he's been in the CFL, have given him fits over the years. So let's see if that plays out again on the field for the Redblacks opposition. Canadian cornerback Jordan Lessard has transferred from the Laval Rougeor to Colorado State University. What does that mean for him?
Well, it means he's going to get an opportunity to play four down football, as I would imagine he's looking to get an NFL shot. He's got rare size for a corner, a real athletic specimen at 6'2", 200 pounds. So if he's able to perform well with Colorado State, you never know what could potentially be there for him in 2027. The Toronto Argonauts have added Kadeem Carey and Javon Johnson to their coaching staff. Do you think they'll be successful CFL coaches?
I think both have a chance. This is kind of a recent trend in the Canadian Football League. And, you know, oftentimes, Hodge, we talk about it on the podcast and elsewhere that why isn't the CFL bringing in fresh blood? Well, here's a couple more examples, and I'll point to one that's worked out well recently. Andrew Harris with the Saskatchewan Roughriders as the running backs coach helped AJ Ouellette have his best season yet in the Canadian Football League. And, oh, by the way, the Riders won the Grey Cup in 2025. So I think it can work, but both guys are going to have to prove it. The Blue Bombers have re-signed special team standout Tanner Cadwallader. Speaking of those Laurier Golden Hawks through 2027, is that a big deal?
Yeah, I think Tanner's one of the most underrated players in the CFL. Like, he's not a big defensive guy, but he can literally do anything on special teams. He's a freak athlete. He's super physical. And I think he was third on the team in special team tackles in 2025. Like, those glue Canadians are so important, and Tanner's a really good one. Henry Burris is no longer coaching at Florida A&M. Do you think we'll see him in the CFL anytime soon?
You know, it's a possibility, and he did have that short stint in the CFL prior to going down to the United States as a coach. I think it was very, very brief. But the team's already naming their staff, so, you know, there's a possibility he's an add-on. But honestly, if I was TSN, I'd be picking up the phone, give Smiling Hank a call as an analyst. Jeshron Antwi has retired after five Canadian Football League seasons. How will you remember the Canadian back?
Just being super versatile. I mean, Jeshron Antwi could rip off a 70-yard run and then go down the field and make the tackle on the ensuing kickoff. I mean, whatever you wanted him to do, he could do it. He won a Grey Cup, with the Alouettes in 2023, spent this past year playing for his hometown, Calgary Stampeders. He won a Vanier Cup with the Dinos. Like, not a super long professional career, but this guy did just about everything you could in Canadian football. Vanier,
how could you not say
all of it?
What he did, the special kick, I can't think of the name.
Oh, and he also did the quick kick, that is true, or the drop kick, the onside punt, whatever you want to call it. Some would call it an abomination. I'm not saying I would say that, but some would say that. Yes, that is a good point. He did that for Jason Moss in Montreal. Canadian defensive back Ty Benefield has transferred from Boise State to LSU for 2026. Do you think he'll be successful with the Tigers?
It seems like Lane Kiffin really likes him. Part of this announcement from Benefield included a photo with the new Tigers head coach. So I would think that could pave the way for Benefield to have an impact with LSU. And let's not forget, it was Lane Kiffin who brought Tavius Robinson and Dean Leonard to Ole Miss while he was there. I know Rebels fans don't want to hear much talk about that anymore, but helped turn those guys into NFL players. So he's done this with Canadians before, definitely respects the level of talent north of the border. The Calgary Stampeders have hired Jarius Jackson as their quarterback's coach. It's a great addition, isn't it?
It's a very good addition. Him and Dave Dickinson played together with the BC Lions, and honestly, I think if Jarius Jackson had had a larger role in Winnipeg's offense in 2025, it would have been better. The Red Blacks have restructured Drew Brown's contract for 2026. Did he take a pay cut?
We don't have the exact numbers yet, Hodge. I know people are always asking about the money. They want to know about the money. But I would imagine that he did so. But let's let the numbers be the proof. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers released starting Canadian center Chris Kolinkowski. Say that name five times fast. Say that name five times fast. Do you think that was the right decision?
I mean, Chris is going to be 34 next month, and with this offensive line being the oldest in the Canadian Football League, I don't think it was bad in 2025, but it is not the best offensive line in the CFL anymore like it once was. At a certain point, you have to start turning it over, and I thought this was a good first step. But
who's
going to
replace him?
Well, Tui Eli re-upped. He's been around the Bomber since 2019. They've also got Ethan Vibert, who's in the pipeline. He was on the PRL last year, third-round pick out of South Dakota State. But they've also got a top pick in this year's draft, and there's some really good interior offensive linemen, one of them being Gio Vaccaro, who, yeah, is listed as being from Purdue, but he won the J.P. Metris Trophy with the University of Manitoba Bisons and is a Winnipeg native. So I also think that there's a possibility for this team to upgrade the middle of this offensive line, or maybe not upgrade immediately, but certainly bring in some reinforcements and some younger talent. So if you're going to turn over the offensive line, I think this is a good place to start. Though, again, I think Kolinkowski can help another team. The Hamilton Tiger Cats made Stavros Katsantonis the first safety in CFL history to earn $200,000 per season. Was that too much money?
No, I don't think so. It's about time some of these other positions are starting to get the wealth spread around. We know where the quarterback market is. The receiver market has blown up over the last number of years. If you're a Canadian offensive lineman or high-level American offensive lineman or defensive lineman for that matter, you can get paid pretty good. So I think it's about time that some of this became a little more fair for the other position groups. Ryan Dinwiddie told TSN 1200 Radio in Ottawa that the team is looking to be aggressive in CFL free agency. Do you think that could work out well?
Did you watch them play last year? Yes, it's smart. They need to be aggressive. Absolutely. They won four games. They need to win at least nine, in my opinion, in 2026. Those fans deserve better. Micah Johnson has retired from playing to become the defensive line coach of the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Do you think he'll be good at that?
I do. It seems like him and Corey Mace have been talking about this for a while, even before Micah Johnson got to the Saskatchewan Roughriders and Corey Mace was the head coach there. JC Abbott has an article up about that on Three Down Nation. So I definitely think he can be helpful. But again, with some of these former players jumping right into it, let's let them earn their validation. The Blue Bombers have made Evan Holm the Canadian Football League's highest paid American defensive back at $180,000 in hard money for the 2026 CFL season. Do you think that's too much, though?
I actually do a little bit. And my reasoning is this.
What?
The Bombers gave $180,000 to Rhett Cramdy at strong side linebacker. Dietrich Nichols at boundary halfback is making $175,000. You're now giving $180,000 to Evan Holm. This is quickly becoming the most expensive secondary in the CFL. This team needs help at corner. This team needs help along the defensive line. Yes, the defense has been very good, especially in that secondary the last few years, but I just think it's becoming a little unbalanced. I think having a couple of guys in that 180 range is fine. Having a third one, this is going to cost them elsewhere on the roster potentially. And also, again, we're talking about an American. I defend paying the Canadians. There's only one Rhett Cramdy in the CFL. There's only one Brady Oliveira, only one Nick Dembski. Is there more than one Evan Holm? Like, Evan Holm's really good. I'm not saying he's not really good. But paying two American halfbacks big, big money, that's going to be tough to manage under the salary cap. But that's not my problem. That's the Bombers' problem. Kyle Walters can solve it. For Justin Dunk, I'm John Hodge. JC Abbott will be back with us next week. Thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. And it appears as though for this offseason, we're leaning towards Friday releases for the pod, if you want to look forward to that. But as always, we have to be flexible sometimes for other programming, so we will be sure to let you know. We'll see you then.